So, does work define us, or is it just a source of income? Do our jobs leave us broken and empty, or do they actually fill a void? Do we even have realistic expectations about our careers? Or are we setting ourselves up for failure? Are we born dreamers who just can't stop dreaming? Or have we blindly accepted our fate? Let's be honest, at some point, we've all asked these questions. Maybe last week, or last year, or maybe right now. You're not alone. My name is Rocco Lungarello. I am a professional writer who has been plagued with these questions from the inception of my career. And though I've been on a personal exploration to find answers, I think it's time to shut off my brain, strike up some meaningful conversations, and find out once and for all that the answers to these questions have always lied within those that surround us. Our co-workers, our brothers, our friends, our wives. This is Where I Work, a podcast long overdue. So shut off your television and open your ears.
The thing, before we get going, the thing that I think is really interesting to me about this conversation, under the premise that you've set forth as far as the show, is the fact that we're both creatives. And I think that that's where the real unique perspective is going to come from.
Yeah.
Being creatives that are existing that are still trying to be creative in their work in a structured corporate environment.
Exactly. Yep. And Christopher and I have worked together, and I know we've had these conversations where, you know, because I tend to be one of those people like, oh, I don't care. I don't who cares. But I can't, when I'm working, if it's a 9-to-5 job and I'm, you know, working on a web page, I will treat it the same way I would if I were writing a poem or a short story.
Exactly.
Like, I don't think I was really aware of that until, I don't know, I feel like you don't think about it that way. But for us and people and creatives, I think that's what makes us good, but that's also can be terrible.
Well, I think you have to just have to make your peace with it. And for me personally, the only way I was able to do it was just keeping at it and watching the years tick by. So, you know, I mean, to go back to the beginning, you know, I was a creative from day one. That's just how I was born and how I was built. And that's just how life made sense. And I processed everything. So I was drawing and into music and, you know, from the very beginning. And even though I've ended up, you know, my kind of core skill is a graphic designer. And that's what I was schooled in. I was doing it before I even knew there was a name for it. You know, I was, you know, making tape cases and band flyers, and I was doing my job before I even knew that it was a job or there was a name for it.
What about it did you find that you were doing it as an expression, or was it just something that, you know, like when kids just do things and you know, you end up walking in a room and they're working on something for no reason, no one really asked them.
No, it was totally intentional. Yeah, it was an expression, you know? I mean, I was mimicking what I saw that excited me and I admired, you know? I mean, specifically, you know, music is really my real love, you know? And if I had a higher power religion or something that gave the world context and meaning, it's always been music as the highest art form, but all art forms. But for whatever reason, music's the thing that said or gave form to what I couldn't say. So, you know, growing up in the era of albums, you know, and listening to my folks' album collection. You know, it was a really tactile, holistic experience. You know, there was the music, there was the concept and attitude behind it, but there was this 12 by 12 piece of cardboard and an inner sleeve, and it was like a total experience. So,
music was played constantly in your home?
But it was always around. It wasn't played constantly, but both of my folks loved music, and records were always there. And it was the first thing that I responded to. As far as like pure energy, I didn't have to think about it. It just made sense. It just connected with me. So, kind of my path to visual arts was through music. In a way that, you know, you look at these great record covers and you don't think about it when you're that age, but it's a whole package. You know, there's an attention behind it. And back then there was, you know, a craft and a concept, and it was like the whole package. So it was, again, you know, it was like I was, by mimicking those packages I was doing graphic design before, I realized that graphic design was the thing. And those complete packages were multimedia before there was such a thing as multimedia. You know what I mean? It was like
the whole thing. I feel like you're picturing an album when you're talking about that. Yeah,
what is it? I'm picturing Rubber Soul.
What's that?
The Beatles' Rubber Soul, released 1965.
What's the artwork on there look like?
So the upper left-hand corner is like these kind of rubbery, psychedelic.
So that image is like burned into your brain.
Burned into my brain.
Yeah, that's crazy.
So, I mean, I used to sit in the floor of my living room and take my parents' speakers, and I used to sit them up like 3 feet apart so they were facing each other. And I used to lay on the floor in between them like it was this giant pair of headphones.
Oh, wow.
And I'd sit there with a lyric sheet over my head.
Because you wanted it to, like, it consume you. Like,
I wanted to be immersed in an alternate reality.
Yeah.
Totally. Well,
how old were you?
5, 6.
Yeah. That's pretty early memory, actually. And it's more, you realize that you hit, like, a pinnacle moment at that time. It's almost like, I'm still to this day waiting for that. It's almost like you know what you want to do and what you're good at and where your heart belongs. That happened to you when you were 5, it seems. Like, where you just felt connected to something else.
Well, I was in touch with my intuition and my true self before society and convention intervened. You know, the problem is that I'm sure if you sat and thought about it and were really honest, you knew what you wanted to do when you were that age too. But the problem is, you know, finding a way to do it in a world that doesn't want you to, you know. You know, we're raised in a society where you can do whatever you want, you can be whatever you want, dreams come true.
Mm-hmm.
But the reality is that 99.9% of the time, that's not how it works. And what you really love and what you're really here to do, as far as, I want to be delicate with language, but, you know, the word's still out on this and will be forever, but if we were born here to do something and be something and contribute something to further humanity, you know, you have that instinct. But it's like,
yeah,
then dollars get inserted into the equation.
Exactly. I think what you're saying, from what I'm getting, is basically the conventions of the world, like the way we have to live, basically make money to pay for X, Y, and Z. A lot of people, especially people like us who are born creative, that's almost like impossible to nurture in this environment that we live in.
Well, I think people want their cake and eat it too, as as business owners and consumers. Like, they love this idea of creativity and dreamers. And, you know, I mean, obviously the way that we elevate, you know, gifted people like the, you know, Bob Dylan poster that I'm looking at on your wall, or actors or painters or whatever. It's like, we love this idea of people that live free and unconventionally, and yet we have no societal structure to encourage or facilitate that, and we also have no tolerance for people that are outside of the box. You know, it's like the American dream. You can be whatever you want, dream big, but we have no tolerance for dreams, because it's we can't wrap our heads around anything that it's too much work.
Yeah.
It's tiring, you know? It doesn't fit into 9 to 5.
No. No, and another, you know, reason why I thought of you when I wanted to have this kind of a talk was I felt like I hit, like, a breaking point. I was driving home, because I don't know what with your commute, what your commute's like, but for me it's an hour every day one way, so 2 hours a day of driving.
Yeah, me too. But I take the bus.
That's pimp. I am not as pimp
which
as
is
you are.
Total blessing.
I mean, that is, what do you like about that?
Well, I like the fact that I don't have to stress about driving with a bunch of lunatics that have no regard for.
How do you get to the bus stop?
Well, I drive to the bus stop. It's like 10 minutes away from my house, but I get on the bus and I don't have to worry about the other lunatics on the road. You know, it's
that is pretty cool. Do you just veg out in the ride or kind of?
I listen to music. I listen to podcasts and I read, but I basically just tune out and kind of have quiet time. You know, it's when I do my reading. It's when I do my research. It's unfortunately like the, you know, one of the only times at this point that I listen to music during the day. When I was younger, I used to listen to music 24 hours a day.
You don't listen to music while you're working?
No, I can't. You know, because I'm in a corporate office atmosphere, and
what's your title again?
At my current position as a graphic and web designer, as a consultant, but really, for all intents and purposes, I'm a brand manager.
Okay.
Creative director, you know, but that's not the title that's on the paper, and that's not the job I'm getting paid to do, but it's really the experience that I bring to the table that I've kind of like taken on for myself.
Well, yeah, and I know because we say, and I agree, where the, you know, we're not really raised in an environment where people who are creative, it's like almost in, the people that are successful in their jobs are the people that are working really, really hard. You know, I don't see that it's coming naturally, except for the people who are, you know, doing inappropriate things under the desk or whatever the hell that might be, which happens. You know, they got a little, whatever.
Like shining their shoes on company time.
Yeah. Uh-huh. So, but I, what totally fucking bothers me, and this is like, I hit like a breaking point where I was like, and this is going to sound like really pompous, but I'm good at my job. I'm really good at my job. But so what? Why don't I put that effort into my writing? Why has my writing suffered over my job? Why has my creative side suffered over my job? I've grown professionally, air quotes, so much in the last 2 years. I mean, really, the things that I'm able to do, and a lot of it's just because of the stress of it, the environment that I was thrown in, here, do this, do this, do this. And I'm just like, fine. Because we're like that. I remember one of the things we used to say is, we're here to work. Mm-hmm. I don't expect to come there and, like, you know, surf the web. I just, that's not me.
Mm-hmm.
And that's all fine and dandy. And I was raised to have that work ethic.
Yeah, as was I.
You know, but what bothers me is, and same for you, but at least you're pursuing, you know, as a musician, I feel like I'm totally neglecting that side, and I'm putting all my marbles into this. That is, I like it, I'm proud of it, but it's not fulfilling the real side of me. and I'm coming home at the end of the day, when you know when you've had a day where you're like, I ain't got nothing left, my man. Like, I'm drained. And then sometimes you have weeks where you're like that, and you fail to feed the creative side. And I just reached a point where I was like, this has to stop.
Mm-hmm.
Because if, you know, all the success stories that I hear, because I listen to podcasts a lot, and there's a lot of really interesting people that I've heard. And what's really common is it seems it's never easy
mm-hmm.
to be successful. Nothing was ever given to these people, but they put in the work into whatever it was. Whether it was conventional or not, didn't matter.
Mm-hmm.
So I think you and I and a lot of people try to find a balance, but that might be the wrong idea, because the people that are really successful in, you know, music, art, literature, any of that, film, it, you know, they're not like halfies where they're doing a 9-to-5 gig and then they're coming home and they're waking up at 9, they're writing for 8 hours, and that's their job.
Mm-hmm.
And if they have to live in a shoebox, hey man, whatever, but I don't think I have the balls to do that. I know I don't.
So the point that I've reached over the past, I guess, 4 years, you know, and you just said a mouthful. There's like so much in that to deal with. Her response.
I know.
It's overwhelming.
I know. I'm sorry. I yeah.
Right. But so, you know, the premise of the podcast, as I understood it, was how does work define your life? And does work define your life? Yeah. Right. So that's one question. And I would say, for me personally, sitting where I'm at, I would flip it and say, I'm not letting work define my life. I'm letting my life define my work. And to be a creative, like you're saying, and we're talking about, like, we're talking about a balance between two like completely different worlds, and people do it, but not in the way that we are, you know. But in my experience, and to your point about, you know, people that work really hard, you have to work really hard at whatever it is you want to be successful at, whether it's like a plumber or an insurance salesman or whatever. But there's a beginning and an end to the day, and you can go home and be with your family and have dinner and have a drink and enjoy the fruits of your labor in your life and turn off that part of your mind.
Can you really do that?
No, I'm saying, I'm not talking about myself personally. I'm talking about the lay person, the 9-to-5er. To be a creative, that's 24 hours a day forever. Because if you're you need to be open for business whenever the muse decides to visit you. Because none of this, I mean, our experiences and our education and our upbringing and our language give form to these ideas that we're trying to express as artists, but they're coming from the universe. And the muse doesn't have a schedule. It knocks at 6 o'clock in the morning. It knocks at 11 o'clock in the morning. It knocks at 10 o'clock at night. And it totally doesn't fit in to the way the life is structured. You know, like you said that you're having a hard time writing. I gave up writing songs completely a bunch of years ago, you know, and just recently I started going back and pulling out all my old demos and putting it in one place with the idea of, like, how do I get back on the horse?
But you gave up out of frustration?
I gave up because I knew that if I wasn't available to the muse 24 hours a day, there was no point in even bothering.
Mm-hmm.
Because I would never get anything real out of it. You know? Like, inspiration hits when it hits. And when your mind is focused on turning in an assignment, you know, at 9 o'clock, you know, on a Wednesday morning, that whole part of your brain that needs to be open is completely closed for business, you know? And that's why live in a shoebox and eat dog food and you know, don't try to find that balance, because if you're going to chase it like that, there is none. You know, you've got to be completely committed and ready to work hard and be open to it whenever it comes. And, you know, like, have your chops and have done your practice so that when inspiration strikes, you can just go by your gut and just go with the moment and be open to it and let your ego go.
Yeah, I totally...
So, like, when I said, you know, when I was thinking about the podcast, you know, how does work define your life? The way that I'm trying to do it now, and the word is still out, if I'm going to have any success...
Yeah, let me know how that goes.
It's going to work a whole hell of a lot better than the first 30 years went, is... How does work define your life? The question for me is how do I define my life through my work? Meaning, if my brain needs to be open for inspiration and for like intention and integrity 24 hours a day, I can't have a 9-to-5 mentality, right? So after we stopped working together, you know, when we went through the ringer together creatively, you know, struggling with all those questions, I let it really dominate and rule and ruin my life. You know, I let work define me instead of letting me define work.
Okay, well, give me an example of each so I can... Because I think I follow, but I'm like, what's an example of a person who is letting work define them, and what's an example of the opposite?
I'm probably not going to do this.
Because that
as articulately or answer in quite the way that you're asking, but anybody can make a widget. Anybody can write a blog article. Anybody can create a logo. Anybody can make a sale. Anybody can make a sandwich. You know, the world's full of people that can do jobs. There's varying levels of skill, but it's debatable sometimes where skill even comes into it in the hiring process or whether it has value. So, to me, the deliverable and the schedule and just doing the job to turn something in is the person that's whose life is defined by their work, right?
Okay.
So with that understanding, the way that I'm trying to approach my life now and my work life, having been miserable for the entirety of it, you know, manically depressed, like go home and crawl under the bed and drink and cry, you know, for the next 12 hours until I got to go back again. And is anybody can make a widget. Anybody can create a presentation. Anybody can do all that stuff. You know, our standards of quality in the corporate world or in the world in general are very low. We don't have a craftsman... sense of pride, you know, orientation, you know, good enough is good enough.
Yep. For the most part, do you kind of put the final stamp on your work?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I love my boss. My boss that I have now is the best boss I've ever had, because they understand how to let people do what they do well and get out of the way. Let them do it. Have your back when you need it, and realize that the kind of, like you said before, the kind of, they recognize that the kind of perfection that we're going for already exceeds their requirements by a thousandfold. Sure. There's no question, you know? But a lot of that has to do with not waiting for the stamp of approval. I know it's good. I know I've done the best job that I can. I know that I've got experience to back it up. And if you call me on it, I'll be able to tell you why exactly that I did it. And if you disagree, fine. I'll do it over again. I'll do it your way. You're paying, you know, you're paying my check. If you don't want my expertise, that's fine.
Yeah.
You know, but I'm lucky enough to be working with people now that recognize that they hired me for a reason, and it's because I know what I'm doing.
That's what you needed from, and I, you know, my boss now, I feel, is very similar, where it's almost like they know, they're confident in your ability, and I think the best boss, like you said, they know when to get out of your way, because that's when we do the best work.
I think, but I mean, I think a lot of it has to do with how you carry yourself, you know? So, I mean, we're going off on like a million tangents. But
that's how my brain works.
So the stamp of approval thing is nice, but isn't important. It's only important in that they sign your check at the end of the week. But
wow,
for you, you know, because you're trying to, because you're trying to create something that's great and push yourself, and you already have this built-in sense that the level you're trying to hit, they're never even going to perceive. What does it matter if they tell you it's good? Unless you believe it's good, it doesn't matter at all, because you don't believe it, and you also don't value their opinion, you know, because you already know that they're not speaking the same language as you.
Yeah.
And what I let ruin my career for the first 15 years or so was wanting a mentor, wanting to be told that I was good, wanting to be told that it was okay, wanting to be told that you're talented, wanting to be told, good job, get the pat on the back. And that just doesn't happen. That's not how it works. And I waited around for someone to do it, and no one really ever did it, and no one ever is going to. And if they do, it's not going to matter unless you believe it, right? I mean,
that's true. You could write
something and give it to me to read, and I could say, this is fucking brilliant. You know, you changed my life. But unless it changed your life or fulfilled you, it doesn't matter.
Do you think it's almost like you have to break away entirely from my natural thought? You know, it's,
what's your natural thought?
Well, you're working for somebody, right?
Are you?
I'm sure as shit not working for me. I don't want to work. You know what I mean? I feel like I just don't know. I literally don't know how people function with my mentality. I think you have to just be MCO. And those are the
people. And let's clarify for our listeners what MCO means, since that's an inside term.
MCO. It mentally checked out. And, you know, and that's going back to my parents, because I'm hardcore, like, family person. And that means a lot of different things, but just, they define me. That's mostly what I mean. But they treated work like work. It wasn't an avenue for anything else, really. It wasn't. It was like, if I go to work, I can provide for my family, and then I can come home, and that's that. It was never meant for this and that and the other. And for me, work was the way I approached it is I always expected something grander out of it. You know, I don't know what the fuck my deal is, but it just was never enough.
You're a dreamer. You're an artist. So that's what your problem is.
But then how does, you know, what the hell are you supposed to do to get to the point where you can function and just do it?
What? Keep trying to make the dream happen? Realize that you got to give up to save your sanity?
I mean, is it really possible to go to a 9-to-5 gig until you retire, and then, you know, when you can, you work on your creative side?
I mean,
it's just, okay.
I dropped out of college to play music full time and do it. And I'm not touring Europe, you know? I mean, everything that I do, I put everything into. You know, I mean, I've got lots of... I guess, you know, it comes down to definitions. It's like, how do you define work, right? You're talking about work as if it's your profession and your occupation. And in my mind, my life is my work. Like, the thing that I do to earn money is just a part of who I am, but it's not... It doesn't use the same definition of work as you're using it. Like, you know, over the past few years, after being depressed and unhappy and miserable and asking all these questions that we're asking right now for the first 40 years of my life, and wondering why I wasn't doing what I wanted to do and why it wasn't all working out, I've really tried to start to try and figure it out and get healthy and get a hold of it. And at least if I can't fix it, understand it. Hmm. And you make certain choices, you know, for family, for friends, for loved ones. And yeah, I could quit my job tomorrow and chase it all over again. But what's the end game? What's the definition of success? You know, I mean, I'm sure I would be a lot happier, but I'd be divorced. I'd be living in the back of my car. You know, I'd be starving with no health care. I mean, it's like,
we don't need health care.
But, well, yeah, like even the healthcare that I have now is doing me any good. But you know what I mean? It's like,
I do know
you kind of got to pick your battles accept your place. You know, I would love to be Bob Dylan in that poster on the wall, but I ain't, for whatever reason, I ain't Dylan. And I tried with every fiber of my being to be that gifted and that special and that blessed. And not to take anything away from his hard work and his craft and his inspiration, but he was born in a certain place at a certain time, and he captured lightning in a bottle, and he was touched by a higher power. He was just the guy for the job at the time. And there are millions of guys like us and women. I say guys, I mean people throughout history that could have done the job and did it unrecognized, and it just wasn't, they weren't in the right place at the right time. Jesus. Wasn't the right cultural moment, you know? Like,
yeah, that's insane.
So, I mean, I'm sure that there are, I mean, I'm going to go back to music again, because that's my barometer for life. But for you, there are probably, you could probably list 10 or 15 writers that you think are the most gifted, earth-shattering, unrecognized talents in the world, and you would give your left nut to write one piece as good as their worst piece. And you and maybe 100 other people on the planet know who they are. And they did it. You know, they reached that supreme peak, and no one knows about them. Their works unheard, unknown. They died poor, penniless, and broken. So I don't know, what's the end game?
Yeah,
no, you know what I mean?
Yeah, I do. So, what is the end game? Because I think...
Doing it for me.
Yeah.
Doing it is the end game for me. Like, just being in the moment and turning off the brain. I mean, obviously, by now from this conversation, everyone's figured out that we think way too much about everything.
Everything.
And that's all I hear is, you're too serious. You need to laugh more. Like, you're thinking way too hard, buddy. And I know it's true.
Yeah, yeah.
But I can't turn it off.
No.
It's just...
I don't want to, though,
It's just... It's just who I am, you know? And the beauty of kind of like where I'm at, having not succeeded at the things that I held so important when I was younger, which, you know, to be a real crass is, you know, to be a rock star, whatever, you know, fame, fortune, all that stuff, is that when I actually sit down and do what I love, and I'm in the moment, and my brain turns off, that's where the joy is. And half the time, I don't get paid a dime to do it. And if I do, I'm paid less than minimum wage by the time you drive to the gig and load in your gear and all the practice time to learn the tunes to get there. And then you're on stage, you know, you're waiting around for 5 hours, you're on stage for two, you know, you're packing up and driving home for another three or four, and you're going to bed at 4 a.m. and you've got $100 in your pocket for a day's worth of work, and then you got to pay your taxes and your gas, and you probably made $40 that day. Those are the most joy that I've gotten in the past couple of years have been days like that. Totally in the moment, just doing it for the joy. Not thinking about it. Not caring about what it meant, where it would take me tomorrow, if I was going to make any dough.
So what advice do you have for somebody who who is basically like a Christopher 20 years ago? Because there's a lot of them. There's a lot of us out there, you know.
Listen to every single instinct that you have and follow it without question, without fear of repercussion.
Yeah.
And it may mean that your girlfriend dumps you. It may mean that your family doesn't speak to you for the next 15 years. It may mean that you sit in a rocking chair looking out the window some days ready to be institutionalized and wonder if you've completely lost your mind. But if you don't follow your instinct, it's all you have, and you'll always end up in the wrong place. If I had it to do all over again, I would not care what anyone else thought above me. You know, I mean, obviously you value the input of your family and your friends and the people that you trust. But ultimately, no matter, your grandmother's always going to love you. You know, that's one thing that my mom said. She's like, you know, you could be a murderer on death row and your grandmother would still love you, you know? And that's nice, but that's not gonna help you sleep at night, right? It's like knowing that you did what you were supposed to do and that you believed in it is gonna give you the satisfaction.
Do you think that you're on the path now where you found something almost like a more peace, you're more at peace with where you are and what you're doing, and there's some sort of balance is being restored?
Absolutely. But I'm working my ass off for it, and I'm suffering mentally a ton for it still. It's really hard work. And I don't think I'm ever going to get there. I don't have any illusion that I'm ever going to get there. But it's a lot better than where I was at, you know, 8 months ago, where I was getting ready to turn 43 and I was ready pretty much to accept the fact that I was going to work for the rest of my life. I was going to come home and live for that beer at the end of the day. And I was just going to do my time and die. And that any hope I had of having dreams come true or painting my masterpiece, as Bobby D would say, or feeling joy or happiness was a possibility, I was truly ready to give up on that. That it was not worth the fight. It was not worth the pain.
Yeah.
And in letting that go,
do you... So
that made all the difference.
I think, you know, I have to break it into two. Like, I got work, and then I got the creative side. So I think I understand that I have to be fulfilled creatively, and that's my thing. Yeah. So I think that's kind of where I am now, is I think my path for, you know, happiness or whatever is making sure that I'm balanced between the energy I put into work and the energy I put into myself and my creative. And I've been putting too much pressure and time into work. Absolutely. For whatever reason, to prove myself or whatever the fuck it is. And I'm trying to tilt the scales a little bit. And I think that's got to be it. Because we're beyond the, you know, I'm going to quit my job and, you know, tie a string to a whatever and, you know, like, who is that? Like, one of those shows where you just got...
Bandana to a fishing pole?
Yeah.
Be a hobo?
I think I'd done that when I was a kid. Like, oh, I'm leaving. Frick you guys. But I think that's what it is. And if you think about it, that's really simple. But then the problem I'm running into with that...
Is that you're going to die of starvation?
No, is that work is so demanding that it's draining the energy out of you, so that when you come home, or even on the weekend, that you seem to have run out of that juice where you... It's really... Basically, it's really hard to not let work world take over your whole energy, your whole being.
Totally. Well, especially if where you're going with that thought is... that you're so tapped out by the time Saturday comes, when you've got 2 days where you should be creative,
right,
and writing, and you don't, and you don't have the energy to do it, and your head is just so full of muck that nothing is going to come out because you gotta flush the toilet and clean the water.
Seriously.
You know?
Yeah, like from a writer point of view, nothing is worse for me as a reader than fucking poetry or writing or anything, really, where it's just like, today sucked, my life is pathetic. Like, I don't want to hear about that shit.
That's
like,
why I stopped
write
writing.
That stuff, put it in the garbage. Like, we know that writing is about, like, getting beyond that. Like, maybe, you know, and the stuff that I've been writing lately is just that, like, so self-involved, not conscious of this being meant for other ears. And I don't want... That's bullshit. That's not for anyone else. So I've been in the biggest dry spell beyond the few pieces of writing that I've done. You know, even though I write every day for work, it's different, obviously. But I just... I don't know if it's like... I just feel like that's not enough anymore. Like, writing is just... I'm not done with it, but for now, I just feel like I'm ready for something else, creatively. And I don't know what that is. I don't know. I just think there's... I figured that part out, but now work is kind of grabbing me by the balls.
Yep. You gotta break the pattern. So, I mean, to answer your question... about what the strategy, my strategy is. Like, you know, we're going to get in a, like, touchy-feely, hippy-dippy. You know, we're gonna go to places that are uncomfortable.
Right? All right, I'll get it. I'm uncomfortable all the time, it's fine.
But, back to the idea that you define your life's work instead of work defining you. The way that I've gotten around it creatively is that, you know, we do commercial work, right? Mm-hmm. And the goal as an artist was always, you know, well, not only the process was the important part, the process of discovery, the process of being gifted with these thoughts or these songs or whatever, and the act of creation. And very often, you know, you'll hear this, the story of, you know, all the great artists, you know, once they wrote the tune, they wrote the book, they painted the painting, they never looked at it again. They were done with it. It was for everybody else. They were on to the next thing. And what, the way that I try to approach my job now, knowing that I'm not going to be painting a masterpiece, I'm not going to be writing a number one record, you know, that, you know, I'm not going to be, you know, working on a Pixar movie, you know, riding my scooter down the hallway, playing ping pong at lunch and have one of those dream jobs, is that I try to, instead of going for the masterwork, I've been trying to find the creative opportunity in the mundane, because what I really get personal satisfaction and good feeling out of is the working something out and coming up with a solution and the process. So I'm trying to find the process in the most mundane things, and it has nothing to do, it's not even something that I share with my coworkers, but having that act of creation in the most mundane tasks, and that's the process. That's really what we love about our work as creative people. It's not having the painting on the wall or the published book on the shelf, which are all nice, you know, the press CD on the shelf, but it's the doing it. And I found that having that, trying to have that attitude in my work, I'm a lot more satisfied because I'm not dependent on anyone else. I could get the shittiest, most meaningless assignment in the world that's just basically, you know, future fodder for, you know, the growing garbage heap of society. But like, I try to find those little magic moments where it's a little twist of a phrase, a couple words together that feel like magic, or, you know, a layout that's something new to me that I've never done that no one else is going to notice. And I'm trying to like have mini masterpiece moments and enjoy those for what they are, instead of being constantly unfulfilled and depressed and ready to dig a hole and you know, bury myself in it, because I'm not putting out my blood on the tracks or my blonde on blonde or my Sergeant Pepper.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
There are very few people that get a chance to do that, you know? So I mean, I'm trying to find the little moments, and I'm also trying to think of work as my whole life, you know, as my whole life, and not just the place I work 9 to 5. I mean, I've got freelance clients I work for on off hours, and I play music and do gigs, and I consider that a job. But like my job and my work is trying to finally be me and be happy with me and be satisfied, I work for me. I choose, and hopefully, and you know, I'm probably just talking out my ass because you got to walk the walk. But I mean, the plan is that I'm gonna choose my partners. I'm not gonna be beholden to an employer or a boss. We're in it together. We're equal. We're here for a limited time. We're not going to work together forever. You know, you're going to respect me on the same level that I'm going to respect you. Ultimately, you know, you have to respect the order and the hierarchy that the organization sets in front of you. But it's all about respect. And at the end of the day, you know, this job's going to be over and I'm going to walk out the door. And that person was never my boss. I'm my boss.
Yeah.
And I'm going to be the boss at my next job. And I'm going to pick a partner that's going to back me and be there when I need them and recognize that I'm capable of doing it. And that's the, you know, that's the kind of boss I want to work for, the kind of manager, if that makes sense, you know.
We're creating these battles. Mm-hmm. And so that I have a lot of struggles between when is it me, when is it my job, what can I have control over, what can I not. So I think it seems like we just have to be more objective about what we think we deserve. A lot of it too was that, like, I felt like I was getting shit on, or I needed to prove something, and you know, all that stuff was coming from a bad place. It was never, there was never anything good out of that. Like, just
isn't all that stuff dependent on validation from other people?
Yeah. There's something about a group. There's something about the process of work. There's something about, there's a lot of creative pieces. There are a lot of mini masterpieces in what we do. Mm-hmm. And you just got to slow down. And what I find is, there's this book, and I should go grab it because I don't know the name of the author, but it's called Do the Work. Mm-hmm. And it basically, like, one of the main messages within it is that there's an ultimate, you're stupid to think that there is an opposing force acting against us that wants us to fuck up, wants us to fail, like just evil, good and evil. And I think when there's days when I'm totally straight and I know what's going on and I feel like I got things figured out, those are the days when I'm so sensitive to, you know, the destructiveness around me and the people that just want to suck you in and the shit that's happening in the world. And I think we have to put the energy more into that perspective and be aware that there's a negative energy out there that's kind of pulling us to the bullshit. And it's like, no, that's, Christopher's finally getting it. We have to bring him back into the darkness. And I feel like that's the whole thing about balance that I keep talking about. But maybe it's balance between, like, the good and evil. Like, I always feel an opposition. And it really feels that black and white for me. There's good and bad. There's love and there's hate. Like, it always felt like something was coming from a dark place or something was coming from, like, a beautiful, loving place. Like, you know, it always felt like that simple to me. And I think there's a lot more going on than what we realize.
A lot. Yeah. And I don't think anything's, I mean, I've come to the point, I was very much of the same mindset that everything was black and white. And I've come to believe that there's actually no black and white. There's no right and wrong. There's no absolutes. There's no givens. And that one of the failings of humanity, other than this notion that we're somehow entitled and a better species, a more evolved species than others, which, you know, your dog Charlie completely disproves because he's way more evolved than any of us are. It all comes from the same source. It's just where you align your life and your energy back to. You know, like you were saying, I wonder if it's my job or if it's me. I mean, you know, to be real, a lot of the times it's your job, it's the world, it sucks. We have shitty days. But I think ultimately, if I was being really honest and willing to do the work, the hard work, it is all about you and your perspective and being able to accept that. And something you said made me think of the first chapter of the Tao Te Ching, which is a book that, like, as far as spirituality and religion, it's the only thing that ever really resonated and stuck with me. I don't know if you're familiar with it. But, you know, I'm probably going
to... Does it come in pop-up or...
I would love a pop-up. I've never seen one.
Because I only read pop-up books.
Pop-up books are great. You know, maybe that's our next project.
Yeah.
Because I would love to read. I would. Yeah. Well, the beauty of the Tao Te Ching is that it's poetry. It's short. It's simple. It's eternal. And it's very balanced. And I used to, when I was in college, I used to do Tai Chi. And part of this school of Tai Chi included studying the Tao Te Ching and doing seated meditation. And so this book was, you know, I'm probably going to butcher this a little bit, was apparently written like around 3,000 years ago by a guy named Lao Tzu. And he was either a scribe or, you know, a shaman, a spiritual thinker, something like that. But the legend is that he wanted to go leave town or something like that, or go to a new town, and he had to pay a toll. And the toll was that he had to write down the meaning of life as he understood it. And apparently he wrote this book and rode off into the sunset, and no one ever saw him again. And you were talking about dark and light, and it reminded me of this, and I keep going back to this because I think a lot of the stuff that we're talking about, you know, we're joking around, well, you know, now we're getting hippy dippy, touchy and feely. The reality is that if we're really honest, that's what it all comes down to. I mean, whether it's a human malady or whether it's a human blessing, we all want to feel like there's a meaning to life, that we're connecting with someone. But I think the idea of good and evil, especially, and maybe right and wrong, has been twisted up really badly. And I just want to read the first.
Yeah, awesome. Please,
the first part of the Tao. And the loose translation of the Tao is basically it's the way, but. The fun thing about it is that Tao really is a unique word unto itself. It cannot be defined. So the way the English translation, and the one that I like the best and the one I'm reading is from Stephen Mitchell. But that's what the Tao means. The Tao is the way. So number one, the Tao that can be told is not the eternal Tao. The name that can be named is not the eternal name. The unnameable is the eternally real. Naming is the origin of all particular things. Free from desire, you realize the mystery. Caught in desire, you see only the manifestations. Yet mystery and manifestations arise from the same source. This source is called darkness. Darkness within darkness, the gateway to all understanding.
Wow.
So, you know, you're a word guy, you know, and you know, obviously we're totally over analytical, but like I've been thinking a lot lately about words and why we've come to believe words have certain definitions, right? And we're raised to believe that good is positive and evil is negative. And I think that you can so, for instance, you know, talking about darkness there, really what it's saying is that darkness is the source of origin and light, and defining it in a negative way completely limits yourself, right? Like the word whole, you get into semantics, right? Whole in our culture is thought of as a bad thing. It's an empty void, you know? And I think we're probably both glass half empty kind of guys. But if you turn the idea of the definition of whole on its ear and look at it the other way, it's an empty glass waiting to be filled. And that's a good thing, you know?
Yeah.
And it's like darkness isn't bad. It's darkness is what precedes light. So it's, you know, it's all one, you know, I wish I could be more elegant, but it's just all one big mind fuck. It's all perception. It's all words. You can twist them to make them mean whatever you want. It's just all got to rest in your heart right at the end of the day. And I don't know. I hope you find it, brother. And when you do, give me a buzz and let me know how it works out.
Well, you know, there's so many conversations left to be had. I mean, really, I could think of like three other topics that we could go on, but
I want to hear what other people have to say, you know, because I'm so caught up in my head and my profession that I would really love to hear what Shannon had to say. You know, the first interview that you did, you were telling me about, and I would love to hear. I'd love to hear you interview, you know, a Buddhist monk or a preacher or a plumber and see if they go through the same things we're going through. And if, like you said, we are our own worst enemies and we are creating the bulk of our problems. And I think the missing component, you know, that we didn't touch on that I think is probably eating at both of us and, you know, bringing up Shannon, who's a teacher and who's, you know, getting her master's degree now, you know, to be a counselor is service. And here we have, you know, I don't know how long we've been talking, but we've all been talking this whole time how it's all about me. I'm my own boss. I don't care what other people think. You know, I think part of what chews us up inside is that, yes, that idea is valid, but you do want to change someone's life and you do want to reach someone's heart with your work.
Absolutely.
You want to do something that changes the world, that means as much to someone else as Visions of Johanna meant to us and changed our life. On one hand, I'm saying, you know, it's all about you and your own boss and it doesn't matter. But at the end of the day, it's all about service too, you know? And that's, unless you get to be that kind of person that's appreciated or acclaimed, being a creative person or a creative thinker, unless you're doing art therapy or you're an art teacher or whatever, the service component of what we do is almost non-existent. And that's a really hollow feeling. That adds a lot to my angst and what I do.
Yeah, that's true.
But I feel like I'm just creating, you know, fodder for the landfill. You know, this week's email blast that's going to go in the junk box, this year's catalog that's going to end up in the landfill next year. And, you know, am I leaving a legacy? Am I doing anything that furthers humanity? Is anyone going to remember me? You know, does what I do matter at all?
Wow, you just blew my mind. I'm going to have to, I'm glad I have tomorrow off, so I can think about that one.
See, you can have another glass of whiskey and then another glass of whiskey.
That sounds good. But yeah, man, this has been awesome. And I think we've kind of, we did cover a lot. We did go bouncing around, but that's my style. I think that's how our brains work.
I think it's really cool that you're doing this. I've been wanting to do a podcast for years. And I let all my over-analyzing keep me from doing it. And I don't know which one of these things is going to air first, whether it's going to be Shannon or mine.
Yeah.
But if it's mine and I've just alienated all your future listeners, I sincerely apologize.
I think it's something that everybody's going to feel they have something to say about. You can go to any place, anywhere in the world, and talk to somebody about their job and ask them these kinds of questions.
Yeah, and they're all going to, you know, that's what I'm looking forward to, is hearing what other people have to say. Because the reality is as much as it drives us nuts, and as much angst and pain as it causes us, we all really care about our work and what we do, and we want it to matter, I think.
That was Christopher Eddy opening up to me like I was Barbara Walters. No, I'm just kidding. He is fantastic. And that was a deep conversation. And I hope we didn't go in too many directions. I feel like it helped me gain perspective on, you know, just the question that I brought to the show from the beginning. You know, like, what is there a way to find balance? But the bigger question for me, I mean, honestly, is it me? Or is it the job? And that's going to be a recurring topic, a recurring question that I ask all guests. And so one of the things that Christopher said that stuck out to me is when he said his whole life is his job. He's not letting his work define him. And, you know, what I think he means is that he's responsible for his happiness, and work is just another piece of the puzzle. You know, it's ultimately being at peace with yourself. So I couldn't have asked for a better person to interview. And I have a feeling that this conversation will strike a chord with many listeners out there, because him and I were speaking from the heart, him especially. And that's the kind of person he is. He is gives everything his all. And I appreciate that. And thank you, Christopher, for coming on. Great to see you. Don't be a stranger. Take care.